You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi, welcome to the Oil Spills Podcast for Tuesday, March 19th, 2019. I'm your host, Craig Ellingson, and I talk to Edmonton Oilers beat writer Derek Van Deest of the Edmonton Journal and the Edmonton Sun about the ever-slimmer playoff hopes of the team. They're hopeless, practically. But because the NHL's Western Conference has a lot of mediocre teams this season, the Oilers among them, Edmonton still has hope this late in the campaign. At the same point last year, the Oilers were well back of the playoff pack and out of it. We also talk about Connor McDavid and his Hart Trophy odds. We think the chances of him being the most valuable player to his team should be quite high. But like last year, the Oilers are out of the playoff picture, so chances are he'll miss out. And we talk about the Cinderella story that is the Arizona Coyotes, a team the Oilers are chasing for a wild card spot. They're the relatively no-name team that has decent odds of staying in and winning the wildcard playoff spot, and if there are any lessons in them for the Oilers. Magic numbers. Now, we're recording this on Monday. And each of the Oilers, the Dallas Stars, who have the first wildcard spot right now in the NHL Western Conference, they have 10 games left, and so do the Arizona Coyotes. They also have 10 games left, and they have the second wildcard. They're the ones the Oilers are chasing. Magic numbers, Dallas has 11 points. The number is 11 for Dallas over the Oilers. So any combination of, you know, let's say the Tuesday game, Oilers are playing in St. Louis. Dallas is playing the Florida Panthers. Let's say, for argument's sake, Dallas wins that game, Oilers loses that game. The magic number for the Dallas Stars goes down by 4. You know, the combination of 2 points for a win, plus the Oilers wouldn't get any points, it's a 4-pointer. If they both win, the number goes down to 9. You know, because the Oilers need the Dallas Stars to lose, and they need to keep winning in order to make up all that ground.
Yeah.
You know, and the Coyotes' magic number is 13. The Coyotes play tonight against the Tampa Bay Lightning. So if they win, that number goes down to 11. You know, and then the rest of the week, conceivably, let's say, for argument's sake, Dallas wins all their games this week, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and the Oilers lose all three of their games. Well, then Edmonton is out of the Stars' rearview mirror. They're no longer a threat to Dallas for a playoff spot. If the Coyotes win the rest of their week, they play 4 games this week, including, I think, the Sunday game. So we'll go into next week a bit. They run the table. The Oilers lose all 3 of their games. Oilers season is over, because that's the final team the Oilers need to catch. Now, mind you, you know, teams change. Look, what if if Minnesota all of a sudden catches on some fire here and goes above the Coyotes, then that's the team the Oilers need to chase. Anyway, that's really what the magic number is all about. Well, I don't expect the Oilers to lose the rest of their games this week, but of course it could happen. It can happen to anybody, you know. Any given Sunday, someone can win a game, someone can lose a game. You know, the Oilers are playing are they playing Ottawa this coming Saturday?
Yeah, they have Ottawa. Actually, you look at their other schedule, it's not really that tough. And I think
they have some toughies, and they have some, it should be gimmies. They have, 3 teams below them in the standings, LA, Anaheim, Ottawa.
Yeah.
that they, you know, of course, just like the Jersey game last week, they should beat them.
Yeah, they should win those games, and they got Columbus and Dallas, and those are two teams who are also fighting for playoff spots. You look at the situation, yeah, you could come up with these all these permutations and combinations. I've always contended that the Oilers have to finish 8 games over .500 to get that playoff spot. That's the way I've always looked at it. And yeah, they're a game under right now. They're a game under .500 right now with 10 games to go.
Yeah.
So if you want to finish 8 games over .500, you got to go 9-1.
They need to win 9 games.
Right? So they got to win 9 of those 10 games.
But, and, you know, and it sounds like a lot, but I mean, of course, we had a recent stretch where the Oilers went, what was it? Was it 6-2-2, 7-2-2, where they obviously won more than they yeah. lost. They got points in, you know, 9 of 11 or 8 of 10 or whatever it was. Yeah. So it's not inconceivable.
No, it's not, but they're going to need some balls to go in their favor as
but
well.
But you also need, you know, all these other teams ahead of them, Dallas, Arizona, Colorado, Chicago, Minnesota, all of a sudden start losing a bunch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I saw a number out there and I can't remember. I mean, there's plenty of places you can go to look at numbers. You know, people are tracking their own magic numbers and percentages. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the site I was looking at, but the Oilers essentially have, according to this one site, a 1.2% chance of making the playoffs now.
Yeah, it's low.
It's very slim.
It's very slim.
You know, one chance in 100, yeah. Just a little better than that. So, crazier things have happened, I'm sure. You know, Bill Mozyanko scored 3 goals in 21 seconds once.
Yeah.
In 1948 or whatever. Could happen.
You know? No, it's the thing is, I think, see, the Oilers missed out on an opportunity here, a really big opportunity. And I think that's probably got to be the frustrating part for them, because by not beating the New Jersey Devils and then not beating the Coyotes in regulation, like they gave the Coyotes a point. That was 4 big points there that they could have probably made up on Phoenix. But they let that slip away. So then suddenly if you go in Arizona and you're only 6 points back and you can cut the deficit to 4 with a regulation win, that's a lot of pressure on the Arizona Coyotes now. You're coming, you're charging now, and that's a big thing for the Edmonton Oilers. And to kind of let that opportunity slip from them was, I think, you know, that's something that they're going to look back and regret on. Obviously, you didn't want to stumble against New Jersey. You didn't get particularly good goaltending in that game. You didn't get particularly good goaltending in the game against Vegas Golden Knights last night. But that's, when you look back at those little stumbling blocks and those opportunities that were missed, and I think that's a big one there. Because if you go into Arizona and you're only 6 points back and you, with a regulation win, you pull yourself within 4 points of a playoff spot, now it's a different ball game altogether. Now it's a different thing. Now you're seven points back and you're watching the pack go from you. Now you have to put together this incredible run that you haven't done all year. And now you're expecting it to do it at the end of the year. It's not going to happen, but I think the fact that the Oilers are still kind of still breathing, they're not dead yet. And we're into mid-March, I think is good for some fans, because by usually this time of the year in the past, we've been talking about next season. Like, there is no chance. At least still, there is still some breath in the Oilers right now.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I mean, how many times in the last, 12 years, decade plus of darkness, have the Oilers been out of it by the end of November?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when that U.S. Thanksgiving came along this year, the Oilers were not in the playoff picture, suggesting that, nope, they're not going to make it. I mean, who knows? I mean, that's not a absolute 100% ironclad guarantee that's not going to happen. However, there, you know, obviously there's something to it. But, you know, the Oilers obviously had, you know, the coaching change, Hitchcock came in, they had the winning, not a streak, but, you know, definitely a boost under Ken Hitchcock, mm-hmm. You know, and they were in the playoff picture at Christmas time. Of course they did lose a bit before Christmas, and then the wheels came off right after Christmas for them, and they haven't been in the playoff picture since just after Christmas. They haven't been in a playoff position at all, eighth or better. So, you know, even though they were, you know, 2 points back for quite a long time, you know, trading wins and losses with the rest of the so-called, and we've been branding it the Turtle Derby for quite a while ever since then, because, you know, there's a whole lot of teams that are, you know, winning some, losing some, and we're doing this crazy junior high shuffle all the way to the end of the season. So anyways, you know, I went to visit some family not too long ago, and some of them are from Calgary, and they come up and look at me with a, you know, kind of a smile in their eyes going, so, yeah, how are those Oilers doing? It's like, well, it's kind of our playoffs right now. This is it. This is the exciting time, because the chances they're going to make it, of course, it's very extremely long shotty slim, whereas the Flames, as we now know, and this is just this weekend, they've clinched the playoff spot.
Yeah, they did. It's funny, the Calgary Flames, I was watching The Simpsons last night. There's a reference to the Calgary Lames, which I thought was really funny. But yeah, they're obviously a collegiate play. But you look at the way the West is shaped, and I think there's really five good teams in the West, and then there's everybody else. And I think that's one of the reasons why everyone was still kind of in the mix. Like, you look at Winnipeg and Nashville, they're up there. Calgary and San Jose and Vegas, they're in their own. So those five teams are the class of the West. And then everyone else is just kind of beating up on each other, and no one can get any traction, get any ground. St. Louis Blues have a little bit of traction going now, but they could easily slip again. It's really interesting the way it's all kind of panned out. And I think it's kind of an anomaly that the West worked out the way it is, because usually at this point, if you're 500, you're way out of the playoff race. You're well behind playoff race. You look at, I think in the East, the Montreal Canadiens are 9 points at over 500, and they're out of the playoffs. Yeah. They're 3 points out of the playoffs. And so it's kind of interesting that the only reason the Oilers are still around this year is because everyone else is kind of in the same boat and no one can get
everybody else
any traction.
The vast majority, you know, the majority of the Western Conference, not vast, but they're mediocre.
Yeah.
You know, and we haven't seen that necessarily. Like, obviously the likes of LA and Anaheim, you know, in the very recent past, like 2 years ago, were cream of the crop in the Western Conference, and they're bottom feeders. LA is going to be last place. There's no chance for them. Well, I don't think there's any chance. Well, I don't know if Anaheim is technically eliminated yet, but they're close.
Yeah, they're close. They're not good. That's the thing. You have LA, Anaheim, Chicago are not in the mix this year, and the Oilers still can't get up into that top eight spot, for lack of better words. And I think that's a frustrating part too, because you look at this season, the opportunity was there for the Edmonton Oilers to make the playoffs, and regardless of where they're going to go in the playoffs, but the opportunity was there. And I think that's what is going to be most disappointing about this season, is that they just failed to take advantage of it. And with all the mess that was going on, firing the coach, firing their GM, making some bad deals, but, you know, getting rid of some, like, it was just such a mess. And then the fact that, you know, they couldn't take advantage of other organizations are a mess too, like the Kings, the way they dropped off, the Anaheim, the way they dropped off, and in Chicago, the way they've dropped off. It's just, these were for pillars of the Western Conference for a long, long time. And now they're not involved, and the Edmonton still can't make up ground on this team, and that's got to be really disappointing.
Yeah, but you know, you can sit, you know, and obviously we're getting close to the end, and we'll have an opportunity to do a post-mortem and an autopsy of what happened. But I mean, it's been the same story almost all year long, particularly when you look at the forwards. Of course, you've got Connor McDavid, arguably the best player in the game today. You've got Leon Draisaitl, who has emerged as, I would have to say, an elite player in the NHL. I don't think anybody can argue that. He's second to Alex Ovechkin in goals in the NHL. He could still conceivably reach 50. That's unheard of. I mean, the last Oiler to do that was 30 plus years ago. But after that, you have Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and you've got a whole lot of else. You've got decent fourth line players, arguably, but then that's what the majority of your secondary forwards are. They're third, fourth liners. You know, obviously the disappointment of Milan Lucic has been around for almost two seasons now. Mm-hmm. You don't have Toby Reeder scoring anything this year. You were hoping this guy would, hopefully at least pot 10 goals.
At least 10, yeah.
You know? I mean, the goal differential for the Oilers is minus 30 this year.
Yeah.
You know? They have no business being in the playoff conversation, because you look at any team ahead of them, and if anybody's minus, well, they're only minus 6, minus 8. You know, I don't have the standings right in front of me with all the totals, but the Oilers are well behind in that regards. And that's obviously a failure on the part of Peter Chiarelli. I mean, of course you're rolling the dice, bringing in whatever your free agents are. And obviously Alex Chiasson worked out very well, but you know, the drop off is pretty steep. I mean, when Zach Kassian's the fifth highest scoring forward on the team, that's a problem, because he wasn't being looked to be providing those goals. That was, you know, he signed Milan Lucic to get somewhere between 15 and 20 goals a year at this point in time. Who knows, by year 7 of his contract, maybe he's not looked at for that. But he certainly was looked at for it now. You know, and Toby Reeder's supposed to be, you know, on and on. I could, you know, we could rip up the lineup all we want.
Yeah.
But that's really what it is.
Well, it is. They're not getting any production from the bottom half of their lineup. And you look at guys like Kyle Brodzik as well, you can throw into the mix there. And that's the problem. They were hoping some of these guys could chip in, and that's all they needed to do was just chip in. Toby Reeder just needed to chip in 10 goals. 10 goals somewhere along the line and get you a couple wins.
Yeah, and then they're only minus 20.
Yeah,
and maybe yeah, exactly. And the point total is different.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Exactly. And Milan Lucic, he's lost his game and he's not going to get it back. And you know, we thought maybe this last year was kind of just an anomaly and he just lost his confidence and lost his hands. But no, he's done. He's not going to get you the 15 and 20 goals that you're hoping to, that you're paying for, basically. You're paying a $6 million player to get you 5 goals a year. That's not going to work. And so I think, obviously, yeah, the Oilers did not expect some of the guys to struggle the way they did. Tobias Reeder doesn't even look close to coming to score. It's not like he's getting all these chances and you think, okay, it's just a matter of time. He doesn't create anything offensively. And he passes up a lot of shooting opportunities, which is mind-boggling to me. And, yeah, he doesn't get those opportunities. So it looks like he's going to go the whole year without scoring a goal. I would put that bet down. I don't think he's going to score a goal this year. And you're right. When you have a top-heavy roster like the Oilers do, when they're paying a guy $12.5 million, they're paying another guy $8.5 million, they're paying another guy $6 million, you need to find good, cheap alternatives. And Chiasson is that, but there's not enough for those guys. And there's too many guys that probably wouldn't be in this league if they weren't playing for the Edmonton Oilers. I think they have too many AHL-caliber players on this NHL roster, and I think that's going to be that's obviously their ultimate downfall.
Yeah, I mean, you know, apologies to the likes of Josh Curry and Joseph Gambardella, who are currently up with the team now, but they shouldn't be here.
No, you know? They shouldn't.
No.
They shouldn't. They not at a team that's chasing a playoff spot.
No.
And so AHLers aren't going to help you. They're not going to help you. And I know that the team is doing well down in Bakersfield and they're playing well, but those guys are AHL players. They're not NHL players, and they're not going to help you up here. And you're seeing that right now. And the Oilers have too many guys on their NHL roster that are AHL caliber players, and you're not going to get the job done that way.
You know, a year ago, some of the talk was about Connor McDavid, and, you know, he was in the mix to win the Art Ross, ended up winning the Art Ross Trophy because he was a leading point getter, had his best season point-wise, actually, last year. And this year, he'll eclipse that. Of course, Nikita Kucherov in Tampa Bay is the odds-on favorite probably to win the Art Ross. But, of course, last year, McDavid's name, because he was the defending Hart Trophy winner from the previous season, the debate was, does Connor McDavid deserve to win the Hart this year? Now, that was 2018. The Oilers finished well back in the playoff race. This year's a little different. They're still in the mix somehow, some way. But for that reason alone, and Connor McDavid's having another career year scoring-wise, but because the Oilers aren't in the playoffs again, likely, does that disclude McDavid from being a bona fide Hart Trophy candidate?
Well, I think part of it is the description of the Hart Trophy, the player who's judged most valuable to his team. And I don't think there's any argument that Connor McDavid is the most valuable player to his team. You take Connor McDavid out of the Oilers lineup, and they are rock bottom. Like, they are nowhere near anywhere. So I think that takes into consideration. But then you look at the situation, well, they didn't make the playoffs. So without McDavid, they still wouldn't have made the playoffs. So you have to kind of, I agree in that sense, you have to take him somewhere. Like, you have to be a most valuable player, but you have to take your team somewhere, because if you're not there and the team still doesn't go anywhere, does it really matter? And I think that's what a lot of voters look at. If your team doesn't make the playoffs, yeah, he's very valuable to your team. I don't think there's any debate that Connor McDavid is the most valuable player to his team, because if without him, the Edmonton Oilers would be nowhere. But in saying that, he wasn't able to lead them anywhere, despite the fact that he gets 105 points this year. Like it's, and that's not a failing on Connor McDavid. It's a failing on the people around him and the people putting this hockey team together and those that kind of brought people around. And that it's a failing on them. So, yeah, it's an interesting conversation. You're right. Kucherov's going to win it. He's having an unbelievable year. He's up to 117 points now. He's probably going to finish over 120. But if you take Kucherov out of the Tampa Bay lineup, they're still a pretty good hockey team.
Yeah, Steven Stamkos is still there.
Yeah.
For starters.
Yeah, exactly. So they're still a pretty strong hockey team. So that's how you kind of weigh it. If you take, basically, to me, the way the wording is for the award, the most valuable player to his team, it's Connor McDavid. But you have to lead them somewhere, I think. I've always said that. You have to take them somewhere because, yeah, so what if they finished second last or third last without this player, even though everybody knows that this player is so valuable to this hockey club?
Well, I think, you know, and the measure to me is when you take them out of the lineup. Mind you, you know, McDavid did get suspended for a couple of games this year. He did miss a couple of games with illness. And I would say most of the time, you know, the Oilers struggled, although they did play relatively well during the suspension without him. I mean, Leon Draisaitl has elevated his game, especially this last half of the year. But, you know, look around the league at other players who, you know, resemble Connor McDavid's stature on the team. And, you know, you take out, I don't know, Elias Pettersson's a rookie, but, you know, not having him in the lineup really did hurt the Canucks in some ways, although they do have some very good players still who can carry that team. I don't know. You could probably look around the Western Conference in particular, since they're having such a, you know, a mediocre season, all things considered.
Patrick Kane had 99 points this year, and he's having a fantastic season.
And without him, are the Blackhawks even doing that?
Yeah. And same thing about Nathan MacKinnon. Nathan MacKinnon's having he's got 91 points, so he's having a great season in Colorado. So, yeah, when it comes to, I think that it's kind of interesting. They may have to relook at that award and say, well, this award is just to the best player in the league.
But the Ted Lindsay Award, though.
Yeah.
The most outstanding player award, you know, the Hart Trophy is awarded by the Professional Hockey Writers Association, correct? And the Pearson Award, the Ted Lindsay Award is from the NHLPA. Yeah. You're voted on by your peers. You know, two awards that are, you know, essentially the same, but not exactly.
Yeah, they're a little different. Yeah, you're right. One is the most valuable player to a team, and the other one is, you know, most valuable player as chosen by the players. I think that means a lot to the players when you're chosen as the most valuable player by your peers. I think it means a lot, as opposed to a bunch of sports writers that just go down and watch the game. And to be honest, you know, I was part of that association, and you know more about your own team than you do about the other teams, right? So if your candidate is in your market, you're going to say, oh, of course, it's going to be our candidate. It's going to, and especially even in the West, it's West and East, and it's kind of gets complicated in that regard. But I think the players are a bit more in tune to who is probably the best player in the league. And you see it all around. I think every player thinks that Connor McDavid is the most talented and the best player in the National Hockey League.
You know, and I think about McDavid and you know, the first half of the year, you were considering, especially at the beginning, how many points Connor McDavid was in on for the Oilers in their scoring. He was like, you know, without him, you know, the Oilers, would they be 0-20 to start the year? Yeah. Is what it seemed like at times. I mean, the last half of the year, We've had scoring from other sources, but you know, obviously Leon Draisaitl comes to mind, and of course Leon does play with Connor McDavid, whether that's on the power play, sometimes when they throw them up on the same line during the game and in overtime. Yeah. So of course he benefits from playing with McDavid and vice versa. But you know, they've had other sources of scoring too. I mean, obviously Cassian's picked things up a bit, and you know, they had Alex Chiasson in the mix, etc. But for that, you know, you look at those sorts of things, like how much offense McDavid is responsible for, and it's quite striking. Like we just talked about with Kane and McKinnon, you know, with Chicago and Colorado too.
Yeah, well, he's in almost 50% of the team's offense, right? So it's created. That's an incredible number to create half of your team's offense. So it's just You know, you look, he's got 105 points, and the Oilers have scored, what is it, 204 goals. So that's more than half of your team's offense that is comes from one player, which is just almost unheard of, the fact that this guy is generating so much for your team. It's impressive, and it's kind of, it's almost depressing as well when you have two players in the top five in scoring and your team is still nowhere near the playoffs, and that's a management problem. That's not a superstar problem.
You know, I think about what we just talked about, you know, valuable players and where scoring comes from and the makeup of your team, the lineup. And of course, the Oilers just played the Arizona Coyotes on Saturday, and they're chasing them for a playoff spot. They're currently in the second wild card in the West. And that's a team that was decimated by injury this year. They had a lot of regulars out of the lineup. And it's also a team of relative unknowns. Like, there's no definable superstar on that team. I mean, you do have a guy like Clayton Keller, who is a very good NHL player and would be welcome on every team. Top liner on almost everybody's team, if not top six. But they're a no-name team. And I know it's Arizona, and they don't get near the attention that obviously the Canadian teams get, or, you know, the traditional markets in the United States outside of New York, Chicago. They're not a high-profile team, but there they are. No names. They're managed by a relative, young'un in John Chyka, general manager there. And, you know, they're doing it with a team that they've had to call up players in the AHL. They plug them in, and they have success. They do have Rick Tocchet as a coach who, is being talked about as a candidate for Coach of the Year. And he could very well win it, particularly if the Coyotes make the playoffs. So I think about the makeup of the Coyotes. They do play in Phoenix. They're not the top banana dog in terms of attention in that city, as is most NHL teams in the United States. Contrasting that with Edmonton. I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're going to go out and hire a young analytics-based 25-year-old to be your GM if you're the Edmonton Oilers, but I don't know. Are there any takeaways from the Arizona situation for the Edmonton Oilers?
It's interesting. I think one takeaway is Rick Tocchet will probably win Coach of the Year for the job he's done there. And you look at the situation with Arizona, their leading scorer has 45 points, as opposed to Edmonton, who has two guys that are going to get 100 points. So they're doing it, and I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but they're grinding it out. They're finding ways to win. They're getting really good goaltending now from a guy that was a career backup for a long, long time. And they're getting contributions throughout the lineup. So are you better off with two players getting 100 points and no one else contributing? Or are you better off with, you know, your top guy getting 50 points and everybody
scoring by committee?
Yeah. And I think that's what they're doing right now. But when you look at Arizona and you look at the way they're put together, and this team has been put together, and yeah, they have been decimated by injuries, then they've had, you know, a lot of bad luck. But I don't think this is a secret. Like, this is not the key to success, in my opinion. This is something that is just, it's a one-off. Because if you put this same group together next year or the year after, are they going to have that same type of success? Like, I don't think they are. Because I just think this is kind of a one-off, and they've caught lightning in a bottle, and they're fortunate to play in a very, very bad conference, and they're getting good goaltending, and they're grinding out wins, and, you know, Rick Tocchet is finding a way. You know, he's pushing these guys hard. And so that's how they're getting it done. But I'm not convinced that that's the secret of success here. Like, I think it's a one-time thing. They got to make the playoffs. They're going to be a good story. They're going to make the playoffs. They play five games, and then people are going to forget about the Arizona Coyotes. I think it's just, you need, and, you know, you talk about, yeah, they're pretty much a no-name team. They have one superstar in Oliver Ekman-Larsson, basically. He's their top guy. But yeah, they're a feel-good story, because they are doing this. And they're just doing it basically on hard work, and they're getting contributions throughout the lineup. Like, they have no passengers on that team.
Yeah. You know, instilling that sort of, I mean, you know, Rick Tocchet obviously deserves the credit here in a lot of ways. But, you know, having those players to bring up, or finding the Band-Aids and then having this level of success. I mean, of course, you're not going to model your team after, hey, let's have six guys go down to injury who would otherwise be starters, and then plug in our you know, players from the farm, but I mean, it has to say something about the organization.
Well, that they have some depth. I think that's the problem, is that the Oilers don't have any depth. And when it comes to depth, it's a situation where they have, let's say they have talented NHL guy, caliber guys playing the AHL that you can bring up. And I think that's the difference right now, is that the Oilers don't. I think the guys in the AHL are AHL guys, and where other teams have NHL caliber players playing in the AHL, they may not have a lot, but they have a few sprinkled out there. And that means when someone does go down, then you can bring one of these guys up from your farm team and plug that hole. And he does it, and they do it well. And I think the Oilers don't have that. They don't have a guy they can bring up from the farm to plug a hole.
Yeah. I mean, the Arizona Coyotes were forced to do that. I mean, it would be interesting. You know, it's always interesting when, let's say, for argument's sake, six regulars were injured. I can't remember how many Coyotes were, but I think it was around that number.
Yeah.
Whether it was on defense or forward. But then you're forced to basically play, you know, what? One of your four lines are equivalent from the AHL. And I would probably say a couple from the AHL playing their defense. Of course, the Oilers experienced that this year. I had to call up Caleb Jones, you know, during the injuries to Klefbom and Chris Russell, so they discover what they have there. But for it to happen en masse, I guess that's when you do discover what you have in your farm system and how serviceable they are.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think, like I said it again, this thing in Bakersfield, I'm happy for Bakersfield. I'm happy for the organization doing well. But I don't think it'll translate to the NHL level, because you look at those guys in Bakersfield and they're kind of the Arizona Coyotes of Bakersfield, because Bakersfield doesn't have one guy lighting it up. They're doing it by committee as well. And so I think when you look at those guys, how many of those guys are going to come up and play for the Edmonton Oilers? Maybe three, maybe four down the road. Is that successful? I don't know. Like, is that something that you look at and go, oh, we have a really good AHL team, but only three of those guys from the AHL team are going to be regulars on our NHL team. So, you need that depth, and you need to have that depth. But I don't think success at the AHL necessarily translates into success at the NHL level.
Well, let's end the podcast. I recall you saying at the beginning of the year that the Oilers were just going to miss the playoffs, like by 2 points or something.
Yeah.
You standing by that?
I'm standing by that. I say 4 points. They're going to be 4 points out. And it's going to be funny, because it's going to come down to those last two games. I think they have Calgary. I know Calgary is the last game of the year.
They play San Jose and Calgary at the end.
Jose and Calgary at the end. I maintain this from the beginning. I think they're just going to miss out. So I think they'll miss by 4 points. And it's going to come down to those last two games.
So you're looking forward to, I would have to say, a relatively exciting final 3 weeks then.
Because they're
going to have to win a few games to do that.
I think they have a chance with the schedule coming up. I think they can, Ken Hitchcock said before this road trip, we need to win two out of three. And that's still a possibility. Like, if they beat St. Louis, then they come home and they got five games at home, very winnable games: Columbus, Ottawa, the Kings, Dallas, and Anaheim. They'd say they run that table there and have six wins in a row. Now they're back to five games over 500. And I always said, you need to be eight games over 500. So then you have four games left to get to the eight games over 500. That's where I think it's going to come down to. I like the fact that we're still talking about the possibility. I know it's not there, but I do think that you have to give the Oilers credit, because they could have been written off a long time ago, and they're still fighting. They're still going out there. They're still battling, and they're still trying to win these games. And that's what you want from them. That's all you can expect. And the roster is flawed. You know, there's some holes that have to be filled, but they're going out there and they're trying to win, and they're trying to do it with what they have. And I think that's something that admirable about this team, is that they're going to go down with a fight. They're going to go down swinging. And I see it happening in that regard, in that way, basically.
That's our Oil Spills podcast for today. You can listen to our show via iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.